before we begin recording, I'd like to ask the people that are online and if the light is good and if the sound is all right. Before we begin, we're still at the experimental stage with the technology, and we're going to, the computers will be moving around just a little bit. We've asked Murshid Hidayat to come in just for a few moments to begin the session with us, Murshid Hidayat and I, Khan. So we're going to be shifting computers just a little bit, so you'll also be able to see him. So he'll be on screen, and you'll be able to see him on screen, but we need to move the laptops back and forth. And then, again, after Murshid Hidayat closes, we'll be shifting again. So we wanted to make you aware of that so this shuffling doesn't disturb anyone. And is there anything else that we need to say? We're happy everyone's here. Let's get going. What's happening in our world, and to consider those that are in distress, and whatever measure of goodness might arise out of this session, we offer it to those individuals. Also offer that to the environment and to the worldwide. Our compassion, our strength, our courage, our sensibilities to what will need to be done in reconstruction. Thank you. And if we could begin with the Sufi invocation of Hazrat and Icon. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. And as I said, we're inviting Murshid Hidayat and I, Khan, in now via Skype. So I'm going to switch my position momentarily away from this chair and into another chair so I can see Murshid Hidayat and invite him in. And we will jostle the computers just a little bit and then we'll return to this position after that. Thank you very much for your consideration and patience. And Leo, it's okay. It's just a... Hello, just a moment, Hidayat, Murshid Hidayat. Thank you for joining us today.
Welcome.
You want me to start? I want to just one moment because I'd like to make the screen bigger where we're seeing you. Hold on, just one moment, please. Wonderful to see you. And yes, now we're ready to begin.
Well, first of all, I thought please allow me just to have half a minute silence in thought of the suffering in Japan.
Thank you. Murshid Hidayat, could you move your screen down just a little bit? We're only seeing the top of your head. And now we're just seeing your tie.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
That's all right. It's a nice tie.
Just a minute.
Of course.
No.
Perfect. Thank you.
First of all, welcome, beloved brothers and sisters.
Thank you. And we welcome you as well.
Let us first start with the invocation. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls,
form the embodiment of the Master,
the Spirit
of Guidance.
Of the subject of today, if I understand, is the ego. And I would just like to say, since I was asked to say something, a few words. One could perhaps picture the ego as being a doormat. And if the doormat is dirty or ugly, it is repellent, and it's obvious that one doesn't feel quite at ease when entering the door, because one can imagine if the doormat is that repellent, probably what's the other side of the door might not be very uplifting. On the other side, if the doormat is clean and nice looking, sometimes there's even an inscription saying welcome, one enters gladly and without hesitating, and one might expect to be welcomed in a nice expected fashion. It's perhaps a funny way of explaining the ego, but it helps in many ways if one gives more thought to it. And then there's another way also of understanding the ego, perhaps seeing it as an energy, tremendous energy, which is either self-destructive or it is an energy which can help tremendously energize others, encourage others, and help others. Because if it is used as a as a life-given energy, one can certainly try to do the best with it instead of using it just for one's own comfort and recognition. Thank you. And would gladly leave this difficult subject over to you to make the best out of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's wonderful to see you as always, and our love to you and Murshida Aziza as well. Thank you, Murshida Diet.
She's coming.
Okay.
Yeah. Come now.
No, what shall I do? Nelson.
When you can say hello.
Thank you.
I'll come on my knees now.
Oh, no.
Hello. Mwah. Say hello to all.
Thank you.
Have a good time. And is it night in their place or is it
afternoon?
Daytime.
Afternoon.
Oh, then yes. I cannot say good night, no. But you can say good night.
We
to
can
us.
Say good night. Good knocking. Good knocking.
Good night.
All right. Bye bye.
We love you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
As Marsha Hadayat said, it's a challenging subject, the subject of the ego, isn't it? Because we sometimes want to know how to quite deal with that in a productive way. And I thought it was brilliant what he said, Mursha Hidayat, that in one hand, we want to clarify the ego, because it can be an amazing servant. But when the servant wants to be the master, then this thing we have a problem. And so the subject today is abstinence. And that term is often interpreted in a certain way. I suppose maybe in our Western culture we interpret it in a certain way, often to do with sexuality. But it's not that in this regard, with regard to the teachings of Hazar and Khan, it is not so much so. It's more of the idea of being able to abstain from the delights of the ego, so to speak. And how can we best do that? So again, the invocation of the masters, saints, and prophets, and especially our Murshid Hazrat Inayat Khan and our Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan. As we move into these next days and months, I think it may be as important as ever to embrace the purification breaths, not only for our benefit, but again for those that are so close to where the devastation has happened with the nuclear reactor, and also the environment. It will enter everything. It will touch everything. And I can say, from my experience, it is these breaths that can help us cope with what will be happening, because things will be entering the environment worldwide, the food chain, and what can we do to kind of help ourselves and others? I believe wholeheartedly that when we change our vibration, we change the world. And we've talked a lot about that over these years with these classes. And so always remember, please always remember, as you're doing your practices, to invoke other beings with you and to offer this for others. And do this practice. We've studied it many, many times together, and how important it will be for us ongoing to do this work together. We were listening this morning, and the effects of what's happening will be more than 300 years before things become more neutralized. And we know that when this happened in Siberia, there are still areas that are forsaken to enter. So the first breath, remember that we do these breaths in a cycle, and that we, as we breathe in the phrase, I inhale divine light and life. And as we breathe out, I radiate divine life and light. Listen again, the first phrase is, I inhale divine light, L-I-G-H-T, and life, L-I-F-E. And as we breathe out, I radiate divine life, L-I-F-E, and light, L-I-G-H-T. So the phrase slightly reverses. And with everything in your being, open your being to that divine light and life as you breathe in, and radiate it out as you breathe out, offering it to the benefit of your own constitution and to the benefit of others. And remember the instructions that our Murshid, Pir Murshid, Hazratanai Khan gave us. He said that the breath should be natural, in a natural rhythm or swing, yet slightly fuller and slightly broader and deeper. So rhythmic, yet concentrated in the sense that we're expanding and opening to inhale divine light and life. And as we radiate and breathe out, we send it out. So the first breath, we breathe in the nose and out the nose. In the nose and out the nose. In the traditional practice, the practice is given in a cycle of five breaths. In and out constitutes one breath. That is done five times. So we begin, again, with concentration on the phrase, I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine light and life. And feel each cell absorbing that divine light and life as we breathe in and as we breathe out, radiating it. Sending it out, letting it touch all other beings. Not in a willful way. We can use our will. We can use our intention. But in a manner of offering, open-handed, not pushing, just offering, so that it can be picked up and benefited wherever it flows. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. And now the breath changes, and we inhale through the nose, and we exhale through the mouth. Inhale through the nose, and exhale through the mouth, while again repeating the phrase, I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. breath changes again. And we breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. As we inhale divine light and life, and we radiate divine life and light. Inhaling through the mouth and exhaling through the nose. Final breath is in through the mouth and out through the mouth. We inhale through the mouth and we exhale through the mouth. While again repeating the phrase, I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. And to these purification breaths, we can also add the prayer Nayaz, the healing prayer on the breath, and I think that is a very good idea. And so I will repeat the words of that prayer. Murshid always gave the prayer in the singular, so I will say the prayer, and at the conclusion of the purification breaths, if one is to continue with the practice of the Nayaz. One is, the prescription is to do it three times. And the last time I'll change it to the plural. So breathing in. Beloved Lord, Almighty God. And breathing out. Through the rays of the sun. And in. Through the waves of the air. And out. Through the all-pervading life in space. And breathe in. Purify me and revivify me. Hold your breath. And I pray and breathe out. Heal my body, heart, and soul. Breathe in. Beloved Lord, Almighty God. and out through the rays of the sun, and in through the waves of the air, and out through the all-pervading life and space, and breathe in. Purify me and revivify me. Hold your breath. And I pray and breathe out. Heal my body, heart, and soul. In, beloved Lord, Almighty God. Out, through the rays of the sun, and in, through the waves of the air, and out, through the all-pervading life in space, and in. Purify us and revivify us. Hold, and we pray, out. Heal our bodies, hearts, and souls. Please keep in mind that this prayer, while yes, it is for the healing of oneself, one has to ask oneself, why is it that Paramurshid Hasaruddinai Khan made this prayer so that all the elements are invoked and prayed to? The guardian spirits of the air, of the space, of the sun. Think of it. How precious is that? He knew. He understood that from his Eastern background, how vital the elemental world is to us. And of course, how much more so now do we need to offer this prayer at this time. The earth is our mother, our father. Our well-being is a very much interlinked to this earth. We are this earth. We are these elements. So remember this prayer daily, please. For oneself, for others, for the earth. What is happening at her core, at her heart, one has to ask. So the subject today. The training of the ego. This is a body of teachings of Murshid Hasaruddinai Khan on moral culture. He gave the term saluk. And so we're beginning the whole second cycle. We completed the first 10 teachings, and now we're beginning the second round of teachings. And the subject today is training the ego, training by abstinence. And hopefully by the end of the class this will be illuminated, what he means by this subject. So what will happen today is we'll be reading from the paper, and then we'll read from other selections that will help support it. There'll be practices, and there'll be clarification on the practices. Maybe you could tap Mahal on the shoulder. Yeah, we have a very large dog. Some of you saw him. His name is Leo. And sometimes he snores quite loud. So if that's happening, you can just... we'll know that that's Leo. Okay? So as I was saying, we'll be going back and forth between readings and practices. There's no better way of training the ego than denying it what it wants for the satisfaction of its vanity really interesting way of putting it right from the get-go. That's what he means about abstinence. There's no better way of training the ego than denying it what it wants for the satisfaction of its vanity. Gives a whole nother twist to it. We're expecting something else. I thought this isn't a very romantic subject. People aren't going to want to come for this teaching. But hopefully they'll tune in later, because all of you will tell people about it. So it goes on to say, this paper, it is painful sometimes, and it seems hard to deny the ego all it demands. But it always results in great satisfaction. But it always results in great satisfaction. Why do you think that's so? Why? Any guess?
Overcoming a great power, then controlling.
Say it again?
It provides, by controlling such a great power as the ego, it kind of reinforces one's own power. One's own power of control, controlling the self.
And it might even strengthen your will, so that when you want to direct it, you kind of harness that energy and you can put it out.
That's it too. You both are such good students. Thank you so much. Thank you. Mershit is our teacher.
Plus, we're here to be only truly helpful.
Inshallah, God willing.
And ego doesn't want to help.
Ego wants to take. Mm-hmm. Ego wants its pleasure. So it's beautiful. We get an understanding here. And I do want to say a word about that word power, because there has been some discussion on some of the online groups, because someone used that word and people sort of jumped on them. I think here we all know what we're talking about. We're talking about power in the way of responsibility. We take responsibility for ourselves. We control ourselves. We understand that there's a resource that builds up by being able to contain oneself. There's a beautiful prayer, a Vedic prayer, and my dear friend and someone I consider one of my beautiful teachers, very generous to me, and a mentor and a good friend as well, Karuna Mahima in India, one of the trustees of the Sri Aurobindo Ashram, taught me a beautiful prayer. And it says, it may be something that I'll share with those that are new reads, because I say it every day since she gave it to me, and it's probably been almost 20 years. And the prayer goes like this. May we work together. May we strive together. May we experience together. May our innermost energies go into expression together. May we become full of light, self-contained in our patience. May we never feel jealousy or anger towards each other. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om, peace, peace, peace. It's a beautiful prayer because it shows how we're interconnected. It also gives us that line, may we become self-contained in our patience. Sometimes we don't have the insight. We have hindsight. If we have enough hindsight, it should give us insight to be patient. Yeah? How much do we want it right now? Boy, do we want everybody toeing that line with us. That has to do with abstinence.
But I also thought about the abstinence and the harnessing of the ego. Just like if we let it go willy-nilly and do what it wants, it's like, I mean, just our own physical needs and desires, like what you were talking about, our connection to the earth. I mean, we like, just an example, we like sweets, for example.
Yes.
But we need to harness that and come above it and make healthy choices, like, because that will block our energy.
Yes, that's right.
And that will block our energy if we let the ego, you know, lead us around instead of us harnessing it like a team of horses.
Absolutely. And Mercer will give that metaphor soon. horses. Yeah, so you'll see you're right in sync. Absolutely, and we know that's true just in terms of, you know, it's interesting. The college where I teach had a guest speaker who was dealing with a number of subjects. Her degrees are in philosophy, but she's become a bit of a culture and social commentator. She's written some defining books on how we look at ourselves or how we don't look at ourselves. And one of the things that she said was she gave an example of excessiveness. We get messages, at least in this culture in America, where we the messages of excessiveness are coupled, sometimes in advertising we see it, with control. But the problem is people don't know how to self-control. And then she gave the example of how what our financial industry, you know, how it is really collapsed with the excessive spending on credit cards when people didn't have the money, people trying to get into houses that they couldn't afford, and so on and so forth. And we see the ill effects of that also. So here again, abstinence. Do we really need it? Do we just want it? You know, is it better to not involve ourselves in those excesses that create difficulties for us and ultimately difficulties for others? You know, I've always believed that there really is enough food and water to go around in the world, but some of us take more than we need. So we have to be mindful of that. And those in the room, we know that. And I know also when we had our guest speaker, someone asked her, you know, how do we make these changes? Because I think people are often waiting for others to step up to the plate. We do it. The power of one. And it radiates from there. And I know all of you know this. You're here. But we should be mindful of it. Not preaching, just being the example. And I said to, I was part of a panel of people discussing these subjects, and I said, you know, every great revolution started with one. Well, the little man in a cloth brought the whole British Empire down. Think about it. One little skinny Indian. How amazing is that? But that's when you harness the power and you use it, as Mershit Hadayat said, for others. One can use it as a kind of ornament. You see? I know when I've been flying on the airplane, you know when you fly, sometimes the infants have trouble with their ears. We all do, but the infants, you know, we all maybe want to be screaming and crying, but they do. And so, you know, and then other people get anxious with that, especially during international flights. So I have found that my beads are very effective. If I take my beads and I jiggle them, you know, and they're immediately, they have completely forgotten that. Well, we can have, by controlling certain things about ourselves, we can create ornaments on our personality and our character that can draw people. That's power. Not power over people, but empowering. And let me remind you, when we think we're being helpful, we're not always being helpful. We're taking people's lessons away. Don't forget, you give a man a fish or a woman a fish, they eat for one day, but you teach them to fish, they eat for life. So how can we empower people? Sometimes pity can be the worst thing, or sympathy. You empower people. Wonderful. Don't take those lessons away. You understand what I'm saying? It all has to do with training the ego. So again, I'm going to read this first sentence because we could just go on here for the next few hours, but we won't. We'll move on. There's no better way of training the ego than denying it what it wants for the satisfaction of vanity. Vanity. And I'm going to read a little bit from the past teachings on the subject of vanity. It is painful sometimes, and it often seems hard to deny the ego all it demands, but it also results in great satisfaction. So on the subject of vanity, and again, this is from the previous body of teachings that we studied, there was a whole paper on vanity. I'm going to read just a few sentences because it connects back to this subject, and it's a good reminder of our past teachings. So this was on training the ego, subject vanity. Man has the desire to do good and to refrain from doing evil, because to do so feeds his vanity. Very, very direct. Okay. Man has the desire to do good and to refrain from doing evil, because to do so feeds his vanity. Among 1,000 good and virtuous people, there is scarcely one who does good and refrains from evil because that is his natural inclination. The majority of those engaged in art, science, religion, or politics are conscious all the time of the opinion of others. Right? Yeah. And they can only work upon the lines they are following if appreciation comes from some quarter. The least antagonism or opposition discourages them and often kills their desire. We know this is so true. We don't want to admit it, but it is. Among thousands, it is one great soul that can keep firm and strong in his purpose through life, unshaken and unweakened by opposition from any side. It is that person that wins in the end and accomplishes things that are worthwhile. So we can take this teaching and we can say, as the Dalai Lama does, which is another big thing that's happened this week. Did anyone tune into that?
Arkansas?
Dalai Lama has asked that the people now vote on who their next leader will be. He would like to be permitted to step down. Mm-hmm. It's a huge things that are happening right now. But he often... They're all one for me. I call my Rinpoche's Murshid and my Murshid's Rinpoche's. What can I say? All the same. It's all gone. But he's asked that when the cabinet reconvenes that they take this up and that the people have a public vote. He really wants to move to a very... He has done so much, speaking of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, to bring the Tibetan government in exile into a democratic way. And he's now taking this next step that they vote on their secular leader. So things are shifting in many different arenas. But the point being, what I'm trying to get to is when His Holiness teaches, he often quotes Shanti Dev. He begins his teachings with the prayer of Shanti Dev that says, as long as space remains, as long as space endures, thank you, Joe, as long as sentient beings remain, until then too may I abide to dispel the misery of the world. Then he goes on to often quote, and who would know better than he, who has tried to do so much and bring so much peace through non-resistance, but has been very heavily criticized inwardly, within his own state, so to speak, and, of course, complete character assassinations by the Chinese government, not the Chinese people, but the government, he has maintained his equilibrium because of his practice, his training. Good example for us. But he also quotes Shanti Dev, who says, think of those that hurt you and harm you, as those that have come to teach you strength and courage. Think of those that hurt you and harm you, have come to teach you strength and courage. And so that's very interesting in relationship to this teaching. It, in a way, sums it up. You know, the virtue of a person is what they do when they're alone, what their inward thoughts are towards others when no one's watching. It's easy to have an appearance. You know that. It's also easy to be fooled by those appearances, so we have to be mindful of that. Murshid Hidayat Anayakam has written about that. He's just sort of compiled a group of teachings, and they're not public, but I'm going to read from them today. And he talks about this subject, how people can often fascinate others with their pretense. Be mindful. And discern, please. Dalai Lama also says that. He always begins his teachings with saying, beware of charlatans that are bringing the Dharma.